Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. On today's show, I'm joined by Dr. Jen Gonzalez, sociologist and sexologist, and we have a lively and passionate discussion as we get into how to communicate your sexual boundaries and what to do when they aren't respected by a partner. We talk about why both parties have to be invested in making the sex hot in a relationship. You know, it takes two to tango. My mom always told me that. How to share confidently what works and what doesn't work in the bedroom, and why becoming a mindful masturbator will allow you to truly know your body on a deeper level so you can share that wisdom with your partner and yourself. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's
got
to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, go to sexwithemily.com. Check out our podcasts, our blogs. We're updating the site every day. It's a really good time over there at Sex with Emily. You can also subscribe to the podcast, and you can follow me on social media, which I love. I love hearing from all of you. It's at Sex with Emily on Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter. Okay, so I'm going to jump in. I'm excited for today's show because like we almost had to start it like the second she walked in because there's so much to talk about. So I'm just going to bring it. I've got Dr. Jen here. She's a sociologist and a sexologist. I want to talk to you before we get into the meat of the show, which you guys are going to love. I can already feel it. We're having a contest, and it's how to be a better lover in 2018. How will you be a better lover? And so I think, so what I've been asking my listeners is if they'll email me like their pledges, like their commitments, their sex solutions, if you will, or sex resolutions, awesome. You know, so don't you think there's so much power in writing things down and kind of taking inventory of the last year? Like, I think a lot of us look at our successes, our failures, maybe we look at our relationships with family and work, but sex, yeah. We both agree, people do not prioritize it or think about it or talk about it enough. So I'm thinking people can like break out of their routines. If there's one thing they've been wanting to try, maybe they want to, you know, learn how to ask their partner for this one thing they've been dying to ask, yeah. Or they want to masturbate more. I wanted you to help me when you think about that too. Is there any suggestions you might have? Because I've been talking about the contest the last two shows and I thought, I'm going to ask Dr. Jen what she would suggest is some interesting, just to spark people's imaginations, yeah. For some commitments they could make for improvement around sex, and it could be relationships as well. Like I have like, I no longer want to ejaculate and roll over. You know, like maybe I want to, or like put it in, ejaculate and roll over. Like maybe I want more foreplay. Right. Maybe I want to, you know, we want to take a trip together. We want to have sex outdoors. We want to study tantra. Anything.
Yeah. Well, I don't think people even realize they can set intentions about what it means to be a good lover. And I think even to reflect, like, what does it mean to be a good lover? And so, like, that would be even my starting point for folks that are like, love it. I love this idea, but I have no idea where to start, and to, like, take a holistic approach then. So, you know, look at what do you think a good lover is physically, mentally, emotionally, socially and spiritually, whatever that means to you. And like to take that holistic approach and be like, what is it to be? Because that is what a good lover is.
It is.
It's not just a specific new technique you learn. It's like, you know, it's the energy that you're bringing to it and your, you know, your open-mindedness.
So give me an example.
So
along
those lines would be
like a spiritual one.
Yeah. So a spiritual one would be, I would say like mindfulness, because that's at the core of all the work I do. And I'm sure we'll be talking
right,
about
yes.
that. Like, how do I be more present with my partner, you know, or how can I realize, okay, I've been focusing on my pleasure too much. How do I make sure I'm being present with like the nuances of what how my partner's responding mm-hmm. and reacting? And or on the flip side, because I've heard this, you know, from some men and women, like, oh my gosh, I'm so focused on their pleasure, I'm not even in touch with my own pleasure.
Well, it's an interesting dance, isn't it? Because,
I know.
Because yeah. you know, you can be like a really big giver and you're like, I just want to make sure that I'm doing it right and she
right.
or he is happy. But then we don't know how to do both.
Yeah.
We like literally don't know. So I was thinking about it. Like, how can we really in the moment, because sex is really all about being present, paying yeah. attention, like, because your partner will give you all the information you need. And if they don't, you can ask. But there's a lot going on just really
yes.
being present during sex
yeah.
and breathing more and being mindful. I love it.
I think even you know, getting in touch with your five senses. If you realize that you're like, okay, I'm in my head so much, I'm worried about performing and pleasing them, or I'm worried about my own performance. And so just even choose your sense of touch or choose your sense of smell and like anchor yourself in the moment with your five senses and be like, okay, what did the sheets feel like? What's my partner feel like? What's my partner smell like? What do they taste like? Mm-hmm. All of those things get us out of our head and our, you know, our monkey mind that's constantly chattering or worrying or anxious, and gets us present in the moment with ourselves and what's showing up for us and our partner.
Yeah,
and
that's, I mean, so that's good. It. Well, it's so funny that you said that, because I always, you know, as you do, we're looking at trends, right, in sex and the world was happening. And then I look at like trends in my life, like what came up for me three times over Thanksgiving when I was with my friends, right? Like I was in with my friends in Mexico. And I'm telling you, a few of my friends, it was guys too. They all like separately, they're like, you know, the women's, how do I get my mind off my to-do list during sex? How do I get into the moment? I mean, I want to have sex with my husband and my partner, but I can't in focus. And it was like, okay, so five people asked me how to, you know, this time, how do I focus? Wow. And what I always say is, you know, it's similar, like, really, like when you're, it's a practice, it's the monkey mind, it's mindfulness. And in the moment when you're like, oh, but who's going to pick up the dry cleaning? You're like, what am I feeling now? Oh, I feel like my pelvic floor is, you know, I'm breathing into my pelvic floor. I feel his penis feels amazing and hard. And I love what you just brought in about even like, because mindfulness is everything. It is all the senses. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's like a candle. This isn't you that you light. You're like, I always light this candle. And I just put new sheets on the bed and I'm going to play this playlist. So maybe this is like I'm just thinking this out, pre-sex ritual. Yeah. So if you're like, Emily, but I can't, you're like, okay, well, I can always latch onto the candle first. If I'm like in the moment, not remembering to think, if I can't about my body because I'm feeling anxious, you can be like, but I do smell the vanilla candle.
Yeah.
Or I do remember that I put clean sheets. So then, and then you, all the senses will follow you.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? If you're like, oh, and that playlist, and then you're not thinking about the fact that you, whatever, gained 2 pounds.
Right. You don't like how your thighs look or your belly's look. Right. Looks, or, or that you're not going to orgasm, or you're going to come too fast, or I love that. And that's like being really intentional about putting those sensual anchors in.
It's the anchors.
And being like, okay, this is hard. It is hard to not be distracted. It is hard to be mindful, even when you're doing something that's pleasurable, but there's a million other things that are going on in our heads.
Right.
And with our fast pace of technology today, like we're getting even more fragmented and it's even harder to stay present for a short amount of time. So just know, like, I think it's important for folks not to blame themselves, but to notice you're distracted and then have something specific that you choose to focus your attention back on, and then don't judge yourself for it.
Exactly.
I mean, and that is the definition of mindfulness.
The definite, exactly, is that you're going back. If you, and this is a practice. So if you notice that you had sex, what you said, don't be hard on yourself. It could take you 50 times during one session. And if you remember 50 times, that's amazing. Well, you still won't do it.
Yeah.
But that, you still won't feel like you're totally present, but that's the practice. And eventually, it's just 20 times that you're doing it. So yeah, I love that.
And you can bring amusement to it. And just because I, you know, I've been cultivating mindfulness for the past 14 years now. And so when I keep noticing that I'm distracted and I'm like, oh my God, Gonzalez, you're doing that thing again. And then I kind of laugh and I was like, that's what my brain does.
Exactly.
And so it's like the opposite of beating myself up for it, actually just having amusement for it. That's how my brain's trained, but I'm going to keep working on this.
Right. It's a practice because we all have those voices in our head. We all do.
Oh, yeah.
Like that, and we don't realize that it's actually our voice. You know, like that, and that is mindfulness as well. That I do that, you know, a lot. I'm always constantly going, you know, and we slip a lot, but I'm like, okay, that's the negative thought. You got to send the more, like, what do you replace every thought with? That's the positive that you set out into the universe. And so even in the moment, though, when you hear that voice, you're like, it is me, it's not me, and you can learn to separate it, which again takes years of,
it can't
take years of, but you're the observer. I think, oh, this isn't the channel you want to listen. It's like, I'm going to change the program, and I'll think, oh, it's almost like I'm watching Netflix. Like, I could change it to have a better one. And then I'm like, oh, let's turn on music. And it's
awesome.
Gone. Okay. I hope we inspired you all to write it down and to really think about it, because a year from now, do you still want to be having the same exact sex that you're having today? And if the answer is no, enter our contest. It is email me feedback@sexwithemily.com by January 14th. Okay.
Wait, how does somebody win the contest?
Oh, thank you. They're going to send in the submissions. They're going to send in their ideas for how they want to be a better lover. Put that in the subject line, Better Lover 2018. And then we're going to pick four people's stories that we love that really spoke to us. And they're going to win amazing, sexy prizes.
Hey, oh my God, I'm going to enter.
You can enter. Oh, you, my friend, are leaving with some sexy prizes just for showing up.
Yeah.
Wait till you see the sex toy closet.
Sweet. There's a sex toy closet here.
Oh, I love that you don't know that yet.
I do not know that.
Oh, we were going to have some fun because you were saying, okay, so when you came in and we were talking about toys for a second and you said you've had one. Can I share this?
Oh, yeah, go for it. I mean, I've had many, but I still have my go-to. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was like one, you've had the same one for 10 years, eight years, which is great. And it's a good vibrator. It is. But they've changed and they're going to rock your world when I'm going to show you.
Because I keep trying new ones. There was something about that G swirl that I got the from
G-swirl.
Good Vibrations.
I love Good Vibes.
It's that specific vibration seems
okay,
to work
I don't
want
to
well
say there's,
me.
Listen, I'm not going to say there's better.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even say, I'm saying there's different. Yeah. And I just want, in my brain, I'm not thinking you should even replace that one because you love it. It's going to be an addition to that family of vibrators.
I can't wait to go home tonight.
Yeah, you have no idea. No, it's going to be fun. So Dr. Jen is a sociologist and sexologist. And tell me what you got going on right now. I know you have a lot of great content online and you see your coach. You.
So I'm in a lot of directions. So one thing I've been doing for the past 10 years is relationship and intimacy counseling and coaching with individuals and couples. Although my real passion is public speaking and videos. I have a whole video series on YouTube in the Den with Dr. Jen with over 220 videos.
Great.
And I've done 2 TEDx talks. I'm one of the founders of Sex Positive San Diego, where we create sex positive spaces for people to learn and grow around sexuality. I've been in an expert in the only documentary on masturbation called Sticky, A Self-Love Story, which is a fantastic movie.
I want to ask you real quick, and then we're going to get into this, is that I know that your interest, I found, was stoked from attending the Summer Institute of Sexuality, Society, and Health at San Francisco State University.
Oh my gosh,
so my
ago.
Thing, I'm wondering, but that's where mine was stoked too. I lived in San Francisco for 20 years, so I'm just wondering if that... There's something about San Francisco what inspired you to get
into
this.
I mean, I was already in grad school getting my PhD in sociology with a specialty in sex and gender when I attended that summer institute. But yeah, I mean, if San Francisco was warmer, I absolutely would have moved there instead of San Diego.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad I found that out. But, I know what you mean.
Because I love that city and the vibe there. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about your speaking. I loved your Sex and the Price of Masculinity talk that you did.
Thank
and that was
you.
Really, really powerful. And the reason why I want to talk about this is because I think that there's a lot going on right now around consent. We never really understood it, and now we're making it so much more difficult. Like, you just have to take a camera in someone's face and say, yes, I got your consent. Write it down. You have to get their thumbprints. And I think people think, were you raped? Were you not? And I loved the nuance of your story and just how you speak about it, because people don't think of it in this way.
Yeah. So I was part of a storytelling event a year and a half ago called The New Narrative. And we were to speak on a specific topic, and it was communication. There were 6 of us speakers, and we were all to speak on whatever area we wanted, but where we had a specific conflict around communication. And so since sex is my area, I did sexual communication, and I ended up sharing a personal story of a consent violation that I experienced. So yeah, I was kind of dating a guy from afar, and then the first time we met, we got together and we really clearly communicated about sex and our expectations and condom use or not. And so we were very much on the same page, like, okay, sex is not on the table this weekend. And he's like, I didn't even expect it. It's funny because I've realized in retrospect, I think, you know, I was in 1991, it was my freshman year of college. And when Magic Johnson came out, HIV positive. And it was like a year later than that, I became a sexual health peer educator. And so my sort of coming of age around sex was at a time when HIV and AIDS really hit mainstream. And I think, you know, and that put in my head this understanding of, like, you know, sexual intercourse can equal disease or death or something like that. And my indoctrination into sexuality was a really think outside the box, like playful, play around with bodies. Like, it's not this just linear progression. Like, you really, you know.
The stick it in, rollover ejaculation.
Right.
Like, it's not just that. Which
it's all this other stuff. So, you know, I have that in my mind. And so, you know, and I start hooking up with this guy and I check in at some point, like, we're still good, you know, like, basically no penis inside me. And he's like, yeah. And then the next thing I know, at some point, his penis is inside of me. And so I jumped off of him and I called him out on it. And then, you know, he went to leave and I was like, no, you're going to stay here and you're going to talk about it. Because that's what I needed that moment.
Exactly. Like, no one does that.
Right. So that's what I've heard since. I didn't know that.
Okay, so this is the part that blew me away, because when we talk about, like, communication, and I say it's on the wall, communication is lubrication. That was, I loved that. It was so, like, that's how you do it in the moment. And it was so, I can't tell you how many times that I still think really today, really still men in their 40s, 30s, they still don't know this stuff. It's like that moment when you're, yeah, you're having sex and you're like, you're saying no, you're pushing their hand away and then they still go for it. And they still, you're like, how did we just say no? And they're like, we're not going to have sex, but they literally just
keep pushing.
And I love the nuance of like, pushing. You look down at one point and he had his pants off and his penis was erect and it was pointing, going towards your vagina. And you're like, no.
Like
and
then you're not doing that, right? Like, right. He's like, remember, no,
remember,
no, don't worry.
We covered this at dinner, no sex. And it was like, what got lost there in that translation? And the fact that, so how it normally would have gone down is like, oh, no, no. And then he would have tried again. And a lot of women, mm-hmm. what I want to say is everything that I tell you guys not to do, I can tell you that I have done. Yeah. So there have been moments where I'm like, no, we're not going to have sex. And then it got so close and it did feel good in that moment. And I think, well, I am attracted to him. I did say no, but I could be flexible. Maybe I had a drink. And then he puts it in, you know, it's, and it like I'm fooling around with them and he does it. And he didn't listen to the fact that maybe I said, I don't know if I ever said no sex, but probably like, I'm not comfortable yet or whatever it was. If I really checked in, no, I don't want to have sex.
Right. But and the next day when you wake up, you're not like, yay, so glad I had sex last night.
Right.
No.
Right. Like my friend and I used to literally joke when like, well, I slipped and fell on his penis last night. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we had sex. Right. It was okay. We didn't really care. And it wasn't like it was harmful. And it's not like it was terrible sex.
Right.
But it's just that moment, because I believe that women, you showcase this so well that we are wired to like be the pleasers and be like acquiesced in that moment rather than being like, oh, and that's the mindfulness. If you are really in touch with your body, your mind, your spirit, your soul, you'd be like, oh, that doesn't feel right. No. And the fact that you brought, you were like, no, no. And he got up to leave because he felt rejected, because men will feel rejected.
And he felt horribly shamed too.
Shamed.
Yeah, for what he had done. And so he just wanted to be out, which I get.
I love that you did this. So you said to him, no, you're not leaving.
Yeah, you're going to talk about this. And then we like,
and what'd you say? I want to hear the conversation.
Like at least 45 minutes we hashed it out. And it
he's sitting there like the condoms on his limp penis hanging off.
He was dressed. Interestingly, I was still naked.
Oh, he wasn't wearing the condom though.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There was no condom there, and that was part of the problem.
The problem was, you said I would only have sex with the condom. He doesn't like condoms.
So that was an easy no-brainer. Which has happened so initially. Many. Yeah.
There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co.
And so, I mean, we were hashing out like, how did it happen? Why did it happen? And I said to him at one point, I just like had this sudden realization. I was like, oh my God, like you've done this before. And he was like, I don't think so. And I was like, I think you have. I'm like, you so easily did this with me. And he had told me earlier, like, this guy really liked me. Like, he didn't want to just fuck me. Like, he wanted to date me. Like, he wanted to seriously date me. He was very interested in me. And we had a good chemistry between us.
And he's 40-something, right?
Yeah, he was actually, like, early 50s. Okay. Yeah, at the time. And,
Yeah, he was
and
offended,
I'm like, but you like, still did this, you know, like you didn't want to screw this up and you still did that and didn't listen to me. I'm like, and without a condom. And, you know, because that's the consequences. Like, I'm not on the pill. And what about STDs? And, you know, and all these things and just the lack of, and I had, you know, said no clearly and we had checked in. And so there were so many components, yet he so clearly easily did it that I'm like, you probably have a history of this. And then he sent a text with me the next day and I shared that in my talk where he owned that actually to his credit and said, I've been reflecting on that. I think you're right. I probably have. And he's like, God, I feel horrible as a man that I've done that and horrible that, you know, I've ruined what's between us. And I mean, to his credit, like he easily could have blamed me or shamed me and like he owned it.
Right. The thing is about this story is that we're not saying like it was a rape. We're not saying he's even a bad guy that it's not like he's assaulted all these women to say that. It's more like, I guess what we're talking about is this dynamic that is so familiar to me. And I think a lot of women can kind of like, we just kind of give in, even if it's just, oh, I'll let him touch or I'll make out with him. But all these things that we do because we don't want to. And men are like, well, they've never been told differently. So it wasn't like he was doing this to women, but it's totally unconscious. Like, preconscious, subconscious.
Yeah.
Because there's no education. We've never been taught how to do things differently. And so this whole norm between women, like kind of giving into things or not asking, not telling them that it's not comfortable in the moment. It's just, and that was a different way of thinking about that. When we think, well, I've always said consent. It's like that nuanced moment where even if it's a kiss, a touch, in the moment, you're not comfortable. Like, why? We don't know how to communicate about it in the moment during sex.
It's so awkward. It is so socially awkward. I mean, and all of us hate social awkwardness, especially in an intimate situation where you could offend somebody or be rejected or be shamed or be ridiculed. Like, that's scary. Like, that feels really bad inside of us. And then on the flip side, you know, men have literally been taught that they need to be the aggressors and the initiators in sex.
Exactly.
And they need to be confident. And they, you know, the number one thing in some great research by Brené Brown, who I love her
work,
is that the number one fear that men have is appearing weak. I mean, we have trained that into our boys as a society. We have trained them out of empathy and, you know, a somatic awareness of their emotions and ownership of their emotions and being able to articulate them in a responsible way. And then we've trained them that you need to go for what you want. You need to always be confident. And sexually, you need to be in charge.
Right. Go for it. And we want, and it's such confusing messages for men, which is why this is, I never, on this show, we are never, like, my heart goes out to men. Like, I want to heal every man and woman on the, you know, on the planet right now, which is huge. But it's a big undertaking. But I'm saying they're so confused and they're feeling so maligned, I guess, because of this. But we were not taught any different that they are the aggressors. Take it. Go for sex. Like, that's your job. And then women, the other confusing part is that, and I've said variations of this on the show, is like, be confident. Confidence is the sexiest thing you can have in the bedroom for men and for women.
It's a different version of confidence.
It's a different version of confidence.
Like a feminine version versus a masculine
version. It's just so different. But for women, we're also taught, so men are taught to be the aggressors and women have these expectations, especially young women I talk to have these expectations like, well, I hope he'll be good in bed and he'll bring it and he'll know what he's doing because he has more experience. I'm not sure that I, you know, it's just, there's
and she doesn't want to be, it's very awkward to ask for what you want, right? Or you may be perceived as quote unquote slutty or again.
Exactly.
And then we have the flip side because I've talked to some men that are like, okay, so I'm asking for women for permission before a hug or asking women for permission before a kiss. And some women are like, oh my God, that's fantastic. I feel so honored. But then they have other women that are like, dude, just do it. Why are you doing that? You seem like not a man. And I'm like, no.
Well, this is what I'm telling you. We want to like man up, but then we want you to be soft, consensual and kind and intuitive. But they can't. Okay, there's a thing. We want that. But they don't. Well, what you're saying is, and what is true, is that we have, you know, the men have been, you know, stripped of the ability to intuit what we want, to be in touch with their emotions, their bodies, the breath. So what we're asking them to do is they're literally skills that they have not cultivated through a lifetime.
Yeah.
So that's why this whole thing that's going on right now with, you know, sexual harassment and why it's been in the, you know, in the States, especially like everything, you know, I guess it's kind of everywhere now.
Well, I mean, it's been going on
forever. No. I mean,
right?
News.
But we're talking about the public discourse around it has really blown up in the Me Too movement.
So this whole hashtag Me Too movement that's going on right now, the Harvey Weinstein gate, whatever you want to call it, sexual assault gate, is that men are, they're all like, well, what do we do? Oh, they're thinking of it in such a black and white, masculine, analytical way. Well, does that mean now I can't hug or I can't? Right. That's not sexy. So it's very confusing. It's not even about those subtle things. So that's been the reaction right now. I'm like, well, now what? It's like,
yeah.
We're not going to solve this problem with these pundits and just saying yes, no, now
what? I know.
We're not going to solve it the way we got into it, which was black and white legislatively.
Exactly. I know. And let's not talk about really the nitty gritty of these topics. And because what I'm concerned about, what you just kind of mentioned, is this then, I'm afraid that then men that are in positions of power are now, you know, shitting a brick and really scared and probably thinking about what the hell have I been doing for the past 20 years and can I get in trouble, you know, and waking up every morning with fear. But then also being afraid of being like, okay, so I'm probably going to mess up. And so I'm just going to avoid these interactions, which means then they're not going to invite women to sit at the table.
Exactly.
Or, you know, folks of color, because they're going to be afraid that they're going to do something wrong. They're not skilled in this. And now there's going to be further discrimination, you know, based on fear. And I was like, I love this movement, and it's so important, and it's been so valuable for so many women to feel validated, to be like, oh my God, me too, me too, me too, me too. Like, it was like, there was a day that when it just really seemed to explode on social media, and I'm like, oh my God, every woman I know is writing this. Mm-hmm. And I just like started sobbing one afternoon. And I know for many men, it's so eye-opening in being like, oh, crap. And we all know it happens all the time. Didn't quite know to the extent. And so I think, you know, this is really eye-opening for a lot of people to be like, yeah, no, this happens all the time and continues. And we just have to deal with it in one way or another. And not that, you know, it doesn't happen to men also. You know, it's all around, unfortunately. But it does tend to be more gendered. So
right. For
men out there that are listening that are feeling fear around this and think they might be limiting their interactions out of fear, I think this is a really great opportunity to practice humility. And be like, you know what? I don't know what I don't know. I haven't been trained this way. I do want to be a good person and I do want to be a good man. I don't want women to fear me and I don't want to hurt people. So let me practice some humility and just start listening more and actually start engaging in conversations with women who you do trust and feel safe with and be like, tell me when this has happened to you and give me details around it and give me how the guy could have done something different.
Right.
And how it made you feel, and like get into really the details of the nitty gritty of it,
right.
So that you can start figuring out like, okay, how can I handle myself differently and responsibly and still really stay in engagement?
Right. And that's why I loved your story, because I think it can happen, the conversations outside the bedroom, but it was that in the bedroom too, just, you know, being more mindful going into the new year and paying attention to like what really feels good to you. And it's okay to stop and say, oh, wait. That doesn't,
yeah.
Because I'm always like, it's best to have conversations about things you want to try in the bedroom, outside the bedroom, like when you want to spice up. But
yeah.
These moments, if something is painful, uncomfortable, or if there's something that you want, like it's going to be, it takes 10,000 hours, they say, to be an expert at anything, right? And people don't even want to take like 10 seconds to have these conversations that are really real about what they want in the bedroom.
Right.
So it's okay that it's going to be awkward and uncomfortable. But once you start talking about the dynamics of sex you're having and what you want and what you desire when things don't feel good in the moment, like it's just going to, it's easier. Then what I think is going to happen, what I hope for everybody, is that they're not going to be able to remember a time where they weren't able. It's going to be just part of like, you know, would you like pepper on your salad? Like when you're having dinner, like,
yeah.
Would you like, are we using condoms? Are we not? What feels good to you?
Yeah.
Pay attention.
I think one piece that tends to be missing in approaches around trying to reduce sexual assault and sexual harassment is this, you know, what I talk about, like the somatic piece, which is like, where do we mm-hmm. feel our emotions and where do we feel things in our body? Because our body gives us so much feedback and wisdom, and often it's really uncomfortable. So shame and embarrassment and fear and anxiety, all of those things feel really bad in us and we don't want to be with them. And so we generally have patterns that are not under our control that we do when we feel that stuff. And so to be able to do something different in these situations in a responsible way, I think we all need to learn how to sit and stay present with that discomfort. And so, you know, for like my clients who are in workshops and all, I teach folks how to mindfully, like, say, just journal on like what is showing up, like what emotions are you feeling and where do you literally feel it in you, and then breathe into it. Because
right.
once you know that you can stay present with that ickiness inside of you, the next time something like that pops up, you have a little more resiliency to stay present. And even if you're only present for 10 seconds, it's 10 seconds more than you were before.
Exactly. No, somatic, I mean, somatic therapy is so, I mean, really, it's just, again, becoming in touch. And this is, again, for men and for women, so many of us are just cut off. We just breathe shallow. It's going from like the chest up, and it's a practice of breathing into your body. And then in the moment being like, what am I feeling now? What am I feeling? Well, what am I feeling now? And I have to say, I have had the experience coming at this, that this is a new, for many people, like they've never done this, they've never thought about it. And it, I remember when I first went to therapy, like in my early 20s, I had like trauma, you know, death, stuff going on in my family. I've experienced like trauma and deaths, and it was not a great time. And what I did was I shut down and I felt numb. So my therapist said to me, I was like 22. She's like, where do you, I said something, where do you feel something? I probably said like I was sad. She was like, where do you feel that? And I was like, I looked at her like blank. I'm like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, up here, I pointed my head.
Right.
She's like, no, 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 there's somewhere in your body. Yeah. And it's taken me, it took me years of meditation, yoga, therapy to finally be able to be like, oh, I feel it right here in my chest.
Yeah.
So again, that's why if none of this makes sense to you, just breathe. Start with that, and then that's the
process.
Well,
and if nothing else, at least...
I mean, if the mindfulness part of it seems overwhelming to you.
No, right. That, just, well, at least the, if locating in your body doesn't make sense, if nothing else, like print out a list of emotions. Because I've been, you know, when particularly men that are like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Where do I locate it in me? And I go, well, what about this list of emotions? Because I'll be like, what are you feeling? They're like, man, I'm kind of pissed. And I'm like, well, what else? You know, and then they'll go through this list and they'll be like, oh, I'm kind of humiliated. Oh, I'm a little disappointed. Oh, I'm kind of sad. And then they might start tearing up and like their whole face changes.
They don't even know the options because they haven't been able to feel the range of emotions that are available to us.
Right. But it doesn't mean they're not there.
Right.
They're all there. They just haven't had space before. And that just the neural connections of ability to recognize them and articulate them, you know, was never trained into them. Right. So even just a list of emotions is amazing. And that's incredibly empowering to be able to articulate that. And it's like, I see it. Like, I feel the shift in energy in them.
Like, they give to, like, sociopaths, though, sometimes. Or I was seeing my friends.
Wait, what's this?
No, my friend's, like, uncle. She's like, he was a sociopath. He carried around this, like, he couldn't feel emotion. So he had to carry around a smiley face. What do I feel now? He was, like, faking it. But it's not that. But this is what we're saying for... Sometimes you just need that reference. We weren't taught, especially if you were taught to block things or on your own for survival, you never felt things. So,
If it wasn't safe to, and lots of folks were raised that it's not safe to be present with your emotions or own them or articulate them because you might be beat up. You might be bullied. Your family, I had a client once that both his parents actually would make fun of him for any emotions that he
literally
expressed,
no emotions.
Happy or sad. Right. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, that's horrible. Right. So of course you're going to shut down just as a basic survival mechanism, and a smart one too, because otherwise you could have killed yourself or you could be a drug addict. And no, you actually found one that was that really worked for you.
Right.
But now it's getting in the way of the most intimate connection you want with someone else. And so we have to learn how to slowly, safely, you know, take that armor off and chip it away.
Exactly. I want to say that I can relate to this because there's a lot of me that was very and still works on being shut down. I mean, it's always a process.
Yeah.
And for a lot of, for example, men who have been in the news lately, and you look at like Harvey Weinstein or Louis C.K., and you're like, what? I don't get it. Like, I don't, how could men do this? Some of them you understand more than others. It's emotional regulation. So for a lot of men, they were never able to even figure out ways to feel.
Yeah.
And so as a result, that can come out in many ways. It can come out in addictions. People drink too much. Yeah. They beat their partner. They play too many video games, or they aggressively rape and assault women.
There's a lot of positive things that men can be trained in terms of like masculinity training. But there's also, you know, what's called toxic masculinity. And I'm like, that's what we're talking about here, that when there's a lack of mindfulness around these topics about being in touch with your emotions and responsible around your emotions, men can do a lot of bad things. And that's what we're kind of calling toxic masculinity.
Exactly.
But it doesn't mean men are bad.
That's
and it doesn't have to mean that masculinity is bad. There's a lot of really beautiful aspects of men who, quote unquote, want to be men, and that has meaning to them. And whether they feel like it's innate or it's been socialized into them by the time we're adults, all that stuff's mixed together.
Right.
And so to me, it's like, okay, how do you be a good person? And if part of that to you is being a good man, like really be reflective of that and recognize that that comes with responsibility. And it also comes with some degree of unlearning, maybe some negative patterns that you've been taught were also part of being a man.
Exactly. There's a lot to unpack here, but I think ultimately this is going to be amazing for the country and the world. Like, I think this is all happening for like a reason, and this is time for us all to learn these
absolutely
lessons, or relearn or learn for the first time.
Yeah, it's going to be a roller coaster, that's for sure, but it's in the right direction.
Okay, well, thanks, Dr. Judd. You're going to stay, and we're going to answer some emails from our listeners. Yay. I'm going to give a shout-out to our sponsors. Thank you for supporting them, and we will be right back with your emails. Emails. If you have a question you want me to answer on the show, that's amazing. Text your questions to 797979, and then you just text Ask Emily. It has to be one word, to 797979. You can also submit a question at sexwithemily.com via the Ask Emily tab. And as always, include your gender, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. Hello, Emily. I recently started listening to your show because of my own relationship and sex issues. I'm finding it quite helpful. All of my girlfriends have been great people, and they're the type of people you could marry, and they would be faithful and happy. However, I always lose desire to be with someone after we've been together for a few months. Mm-hmm. I'll try to talk about what I like, but nothing ever comes of it. I mainly have a love for oral play, both giving and receiving, and I need my partner to give and love oral, but nobody seems to. I'm very clean, healthy, and fit, as I'm a natural bodybuilder. Is there something wrong with me losing interest in all these seemingly good people? Is loving oral play that out there that most women consider it taboo? Thank you, Jesse, 24, Spokane, Washington. Okay, thanks, Jesse, for your email. I think this is interesting because there's a few things going on mm-hmm. here. He says that his girlfriends are great, and the problem is he loves, you know, oral sex. Women are giving him enough oral sex, but then ultimately he loses interest. He's 24 years old. And we get this from a lot of men. You know, they're like, and women, I'm with mm-hmm. someone. And why does it change after a few months? Or why do I lose that attraction? Or why aren't I getting what I want? And I think it's go easy on yourself. Maybe you're not really into having a relationship right now, or you might want to.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things going on in this one, I think. I mean, one of them is, I mean, we do know the research of neurochemicals, and that, you know, anywhere from a few months to, you know, 2 or 3 years or something, that there is a shift, you know, early lust in the neurochemical, the chemical cocktail of neurotransmitters of dopamine and oxytocin and endorphins. Those don't last in the same way long term, which, you know, in some ways is good because, like, Jesus, you know, think about, you burn the candle at both ends, you stay up fucking all night long, and it's the best thing ever. Like, if folks did that all the time, like, who would raise kids and who would go to jobs and stuff like that? And so I think it's sort of kind of biologically built into us that the neurochemicals change over time.
Of course, the honeymoon phase.
Right.
It's going to happen in every relationship.
Could be two and a half years. Yeah.
Exactly.
Some people maintain a higher level of desire. So, but just knowing that that is a normal type of thing, and that it's a big shift in the brain when you're shifting out of that to more long-term love and commitment, then you got to really figure out, okay, what's sexy, and how do I enjoy sexual encounters that aren't based just on that chemical cocktail.
Exactly. And then it's okay and it's normal. That I think that this model that we're just supposed to be moving towards monogamy, and something's wrong if you maybe just after a few months, yeah, exactly, like you're attracted, you're not, and you move on to someone else. Like, that's not, could be a process. And then when you realize that you're ready for a longer term commitment, that's when you move into that, but not to put pressure on yourself that anything's wrong.
Yeah.
Now the thing about the oral play is interesting because, like, that women don't want to provide them with oral sex
or receive it.
Well, don't you hear this? So I feel like this is, and again, I do think that this goes back to a lot of it is, you know, self-confidence and understanding your body. So for a lot of women, I feel like a lot of women in their 20s, early 20s might not be as interested and as confident, or they don't want it because they don't feel confident in their body. Yeah. They've never had it done. They're not, there's a certain thing around that. Or men who've approached it maybe didn't feel good.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a reason that folks say that women hit their sexual stride more in their 30s, and that isn't really a neurochemical thing or a biological thing. I mean, some of it could be, but I think it's more because we learn to like our bodies. We know our bodies. We don't feel shame about our genitals. Like, we embrace our pleasure in new ways. We've had some experience under our belt. We've gotten more confident versus the shame and the good girl ideology and all these things we might have been raised with that is very disembodying around us. You know, in embracing our sexuality and feeling like we have a right to our pleasure and asking for it.
Right. I mean, I think about that. And I think, but is it really just it's a process that women have to go through? I mean, how can we, you know, teach, this is what we're trying to do, teach women younger that, like, you don't have to spend your 20s, like, having bad sex and not getting pleasure. Like, if you could, And that's what it goes back to, like I always say, sex education, teaching more about the pleasure than just the fear. And
it's
so
rarely part of it.
So I'm hoping that I'd love a lot of women to, you know.
Well, it'd be nice to like learn that we have a clitoris. I don't know. Growing up in Pennsylvania, that was not part of the anatomy.
Nothing.
My first boyfriend was a late bloomer at 18, like was the first one. And I was like, oh, I didn't know I had that thing down there. Thank God he knew I had it down there.
Oh, you did. You're lucky. Yeah, I didn't have anyone who knew until I was like 20. And my friends were like, what? You never had an orgasm? I'm like, I don't break this down for me. What am I missing? What are you talking about?
How do you make that happen?
I know. Exactly. Okay, so women think, is loving or play that out there?
No.
I don't think it's that out there at all. So you're going to find women who are more self-aware and into it. So, you know.
Right, and some women like it.
And, are really into it.
And then there's lots of women who don't, but who care about their partner, who care about giving their partner pleasure, and, you know, want to give it in that way. So
wait, he says he's also having a hard time finding partners who love giving oral. So I think that's also a confidence thing. So not just receiving it, but like, why aren't I getting enough blowjobs, Emily?
Yeah, but the love piece, I mean, just because you love getting it and you love giving it doesn't mean other people love giving it in the same way. And yeah,
but
you will find somebody.
That's also something that you learn over time to truly, okay, not every woman, again, you might never love giving blowjobs. And that is totally fine. Be upfront about it, though, and be like, I am not a blowjob giver.
Right.
But I
you got
to
earn them.
Yeah, earn them. Do you really see? I just feel like.
No, but that's in the context of like me and who I am and knowing me. It's not done in an obnoxious way. It's done in a like, you need to, like, I have some unique pleasure triggers and I need you to be attuned enough and care enough and, you know, involved enough in me and like interactive with me that you get me to a point that I am feeling so good, so freaking good that I am like so happy to give you whatever pleasure you want.
Okay, so
and it's not going to be the typical things that often that men think, you know, with their training. So like they need to be able to put their years of their sexual playbook up on a shelf and like maybe start scratch with me and have the courage to do that.
Exactly. It's like, can you please inspire me enough so I want to give you a blowjob? And by inspiring me or women enough, it's like really just, if you, I mean, this notion that men, I think, have this expectation, or many people have this expectation that we're just going to be into it when they walk in the door, and that's the whole arousal versus desire thing that women, like, we're not ready yet. But what if a guy approached it to just like, I'm going to give you pleasure. I'm going to find those hot buttons. I'm going to turn you on so much.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do all these things that, and I'm not saying it's more time. I'm not saying it's take you probably less time.
It's more mindfulness, though.
It is more mindful.
And more sensuality.
And then your blowjobs will be flying in your direction.
I'm just turned on thinking about this right now.
Right?
This is good. This show's good foreplay.
Right? I love it. So Jesse, there you go. So why don't you maybe, I was also going to say maybe he's not picking the right women or his picker's broken. I feel like, Jesse, the next woman that you go out with, think about what can I do in this moment to really please her? And I think you'll be wildly surprised at how many blowjobs might be coming your way.
I'd say one other thing too is you never know, like our diet impacts, you know, our sexual fluids.
Oh, let's talk about that.
And so, and I'm a vegetarian, and so I think we taste sweeter. But I do think, right, if a guy, you know, eats a lot of red meat or has a lot of, you know, caffeine or garlic and onions and stuff like that stuff shows up and it's not the best tasting.
Wow.
So there is
inspired a world of vegans just now. Men, all the men in the world. That's all you gotta say, right? No.
That's good. So I don't mean this for Jesse to feel self-conscious about himself, but I mean
no,
I do think there is
that.
An awareness about what we're putting in our bodies and that it can show up in our taste.
So women aren't giving, but I don't know. But yeah, that is true. But we're not sure that he's not getting blowjobs because he's
eating a lot of red meats.
I have no idea.
But it could
be
a million different things.
But just that whole, like, be healthy, you'll have better sex. Exercise more, eat healthy, you'll have a better life.
Or maybe
better
he is getting a lot of blowjobs and he just wants even more. Like, we have no idea.
Probably. Okay, let's move on to another email. Jesse, let us know how that goes. You can thank me. Thank us both. Hi, Emily. I'm a 25-year-old woman, and I've been enjoying sleeping with some casual partners. I recently got out of a serious relationship, and I'm enjoying the freedom that comes along with being single. I recently had an amazing hookup, and I can't stop thinking about it. We spent the whole afternoon together. We had sex twice, and both sessions were about an hour long. The guy was incredible. For sure, some of the best sex I've ever had. He did some things I've never experienced before, like slapping my face and I'm hoping to get some feedback. I didn't hate it, but I'm also very conscious about feeling empowered and ensuring that I feel safe and in control too. Have you ever experienced anything like that? Should I talk to him about it? Thanks so much in advance, Marie, 25, Seattle. So yeah, that's kind of what we're talking about. This nuanced in the moment, how do you communicate about things or after about things that didn't work? Because she could flip this, right? So they were an hour long. He was incredible. But so in the moment, Marie, we're saying that she's having sex. It's great. But he slapped her.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that, again, talk about consent.
Yeah.
You never want to go in and like slap someone without beforehand. You're like, hey, are you into rough sex? Are you into rough play? Like, how would you feel if I slapped you or spanked you? Or that's what I'm into. You don't ever just slap, choke, grab, pull hair even, and suggest
push.
None of this. But this is, again, not going to go off on the whole porn thing, but I do believe for many men, like, I don't feel like that was happening as much maybe 20 years, like the choking and the pushing and the so I would say that how did, in the moment, I love you're asking this, Marie, because this will happen again. Things will happen during sex and you're not going to be quite comfortable.
It's funny, I've heard some men say, and they really do believe this, they're like, well, all women like it rough. All women like all when I'm you know, in charge and take charge in that way. And so, I mean, maybe I have no idea what the percentages are, but that is something you don't want to make an assumption about. One, it's not consensual. Two, you could hurt someone. Three, you have no idea what that person's abuse past is. And if you're going to trigger them or re-traumatize them or a PTSD type thing, like, it's just not respectful.
Right.
And it can be really quite scary and defensive. And so, don't do stuff like that without having a conversation first.
And so Marie's thing here, though, she says, you know, I didn't hate it, but she's conscious about feeling empowered and ensuring that I feel safe and control too. So maybe it's something she could be into, rougher play, but it feels like, Marie, that it just happened and it was startling to you because maybe you haven't experienced it. He didn't ask you. And with someone that you feel safe with and comfortable and you had the conversation, you might find you enjoy things that you never knew. So it's more about kind of talking about ahead of time, you would have known, or you guys could feel out what your boundaries are and what feels good.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, her moving forward to talk to this guy, if they're going to keep hooking up, being like, dude, you're amazing. Like, I love you. You're
love
amazing.
This
is great.
You.
This is awesome. Like, so this was incredible and so memorable. And there were some things that were new to me and I'm not quite sure how I feel about them because they were new experiences. Like, can we just talk about them? And, you know, coming up, like, one of these, like, I've never really done any rough play and you did this. Like, so tell me, like, why did you do that? And what does that mean to you? And can I share the same of what it meant to me? And, you know, can we, you know, and I'm not saying I don't want any more of that, but I definitely need to have a conversation for you to hear my voice around this.
Right. Exactly. That's a great point. Like, just to have that real, and that's not going to be easy for you, Marie. I'm not saying that you're going to be like, oh, that's easy, but your voice might shake. It's going to be, these are the kind of conversations that men and women have to start having, with each other, any couples, and it'll get easier and it'll become part. Like I said, I think there's going to be a time and hopefully in the very near future where you're not going to believe you couldn't have said these things or stood up in that moment. So it'll be,
and to start with that genuine compliment, because you don't want him to get defensive, because then you're not gonna be able to have that conversation, and he still might, and that's his responsibility. But if your goal is to really have clear communication, then to start with, like, dude, like, you're awesome, like, that's a vulnerable thing to say, to tell someone they're really awesome.
That too,
and
is vulnerable.
You open with vulnerability and putting yourself out there, you've also genuinely complimented them, been like, this was great, I want more, and
this part of
and
it
this
though
was new this right. was and maybe, new to me I'd like to talk about this
right And rough play might not be my thing, but I've always thought about being spanked. You know, Marie, maybe this is a great time to ask for what you do want. Hi, Emily. I'm new to the dating scene, and because of a Christian upbringing and lots of academic study, I'm still a virgin at 30 plus. I've met this guy. We've agreed to take things slow. He's recently divorced, and we meet every 10 days or so for a date and usually end up in bed and play around. He likes going down on me. It feels amazing, but what he's doing isn't bringing me to orgasm, and I think it's bumming him out. I'm okay with not coming. I know not everything pleasurable has to lead to climax, but I'd like to. What are some things I can ask him to do? What should I say, suggest, etc. to get there? I'm still working on being more vocal and saying what I want in the bedroom. My mind usually goes blank and it's hard. Thank you, Anne, 34, Michigan. Anne, I love the way she put this because I know that feeling. My mind goes blank all the time. And then when it comes to something, when you're anxious, I mean, during sex, when you like have to talk about things, or at least earlier on when you're like, what do I say? Nothing. I feel nothing. I feel blank. I'm frozen. And so, I mean, that's such a great way of putting it, because it's like, I understand that because you haven't done it before. So that's your brain going, this is scary. I'm not sure. And so I feel like being more vocal, I would say this comes once you truly, you know, learn your body, master. We can talk about mindful masturbation, and you get into it and you're like, oh, I know what feels good to me. I need a finger here, a tongue here. I need to move in this position. You'll know exactly what to say because you're like, oh, I'm, this is what I need. And then you'll be able to tell them. But right now it sounds like maybe you're just not sure. And there's a lot of women who are like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to ask for.
Yeah.
And I mean, how did they ask for it?
I had a couple of thoughts. I mean, one is, you know, how does she masturbate? So how does she get off? And is she willing to start bringing that into it? And then teaching him in the moment how to do that. And I think what can be helpful sometimes, because people are afraid it's going to ruin the moment or it's not romantic, it's awkward. And so sometimes I recommend, and for some couples this works, actually doing kind of a session with each other that's very rather clinical. And that so you're just like, okay, but this is class. We're in class right now. And so if you take that more heady approach, and this doesn't have to be the most romantic thing ever, you can really play with the nuances of giving feedback. I'm like, okay, I put my tongue here. Like, what's that? And then I put my finger here. And then I try this. And then we bring this lube in. Like, which works better? And if I shift this or that? And like that real detailed nuances in the moment. And then your partner, he can start to make it his own. Yeah. But he needs some of those basics. And you need to give that moment-to-moment feedback sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. It is. That's because we're learning a new skill. I like the clinical approach. I'm thinking like, we could bring in a vulva puppet. I mean, you could have a vulva right there, but if you don't even want to do it clinically, you could do it over dinner. No.
Yeah.
But it is true that you, in the moment, even when you're having sex, if you don't want it to be as clinical without sex, you could show them, like literally take your partner's hand and place it to where you need it.
Which is so interesting because that feels so vulnerable and awkward.
It's all
so
vulnerable. Awkward. That's what we're talking about.
It's so vulnerable. And again, I mean, that brings us back to, you know, what we talked to before about learning how to sit with that social awkwardness and even journaling on it and writing about it and seeing where you feel it in you and breathing it and knowing you could stay present with it. Because that's true strength, is being able to stay present with all of that discomfort and not run from it, numb from it, hide from it, and then have the courage to still have a voice through it and stay present. So that's just, it's a learning process.
But you're going to learn, and I'm glad that you're asking, Anne. So really, the words don't have to be perfect. It's just start talking. It's just like your sex will be so much better. I promise. Yeah. It's satisfying. Thank you so much, Dr. Jen, for being here. Okay, so everyone can find you. Give your website. We'll have this all in the show notes as well.
Okay.
But tell me.
Yeah, so folks can find me. My main website is drjensden.com. That's drjennsden.com. And then that's my handle for Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Dr. Jen's Den is all of those things.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Jen, for being here. And I appreciate it. I appreciate your talking about all this stuff with me. And everyone can check out your videos and everything on your line and your online courses. Wow, you guys. Thank you for listening to the show. I love you all. Happy almost New Year. It's going to be a new year. So I'd love to hear from you on the on our contest. It'd be really fun. Intentional. I think there's a lot of things to think about after the show. Such a great discussion. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.
It's good for me.